Hey everyone, if you want to support the ongoing actor strike, consider supporting and sending your donation to entertainmentcommunityfund.org and make sure your donation is directed to film and television. This is not a strike fund, it is a fund for the people who are affected by the terrible executives on top that are ruining the film industry. We at Renegade Animation and Renegade Pop Culture stand with the unions and people that are on strike right now. With all that said, if you like what we do, please give us a like, a follow, and a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. We are everywhere. Or consider supporting our Patreon. That way we can keep doing what we love, and that's talking about animation. And now, on with the show.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Renegade Animation on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host this evening. Joining me, as always, is the animation guru himself, Cameron.
Howdy, howdy.
And today we have a pretty fun episode. We've got a review for Blue Giant, the new film distributed by G-Kids. But before that, I do have to point out that as of this recording, Monday, October 16th, we are celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Walt Disney Company. And to celebrate, last night on ABC for The Wonderful World of Disney, they premiered a new short called Once Upon a Studio, which basically celebrates the entire history of Disney's animation. And Cameron, what are your thoughts?
These are very complicated thoughts because on one hand, I very much enjoyed it as a tribute to, like, how many animated films have they made since those 100 years? Like, 63 now, or?
Wish will be the 62nd.
Jeez. Well, either way, like, they have 100 years of adaptations and characters to pull from. And for a short that's basically Night at the Museum, Disney's Animation Studio Edition, I thought it was a touching tribute to see all of the different characters from the past to now interacting with one another. And some of the interactions were very cute. I loved the 101 Dalmatians watching the Fantasia sequence with the devil.
That was cute.
That was cute. I liked the interactions with Mickey and Wreck-It Ralph. I thought that was a very charming thing that felt on character. Like, that was the thing I liked about it. They kept true to what the characters were like. And I loved the Olaf scene just because it's a quick, fun little bit of dialogue. And you see him interact with the genie from Aladdin. It was fun, and it was cool that they brought back a bunch of the 90s era and maybe earlier Disney 2D animation veterans to handle the animation for this special.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a very nice touch. And from what I could tell, there was no AI used for the voices for a lot of the characters used. I didn't just use like some kind of machine to replicate some of the voices. I think a lot of them were from the actual films that they were each respectively from, especially from like Peter Pan and the fairy godmothers from Sleeping Beauty.
Some of them you can tell in the quality of the recording that some were actually a majority of them were like new dialogue, but a good chunk of them who were brought to life through archival recordings.
I mean, it was just nice to see that. I didn't see any credits saying, like, here's AI machine number 28 or something to help with this, because that was a big thing about that Anthony Bourdain documentary from maybe 2 years ago. Yeah, where they had AI, like, fill out some dialogue for Anthony Bourdain to say during the documentary, but it was, like, after he passed away, so there was that morally complicated, like, I don't know about that. So I think they just used archival recordings for stuff like the genie, the Peter Pan and the kids. You could definitely tell that they used some new voice actors. Like, I saw Eric Bauza mentioned in the credit.
And Jess Harnell voices a Scuttle.
It was very touching. I mean, it was a very bare bones basic plot of all the characters taking a portrait in front of the studio itself, which was very touching this, and also a great image to use for Easter egg hunting of just trying to identify every single character that showed up in that group photo. And it is interesting how they, we know dinosaurs exist, but I don't think I saw any of the Chicken Little characters. I saw the Meet the Robinsons characters, but I don't think I saw anyone from Chicken Little in that.
I would have to comb over the like the final image, but I'm pretty sure they're like kind of tucked away in a corner somewhere.
And they even had like in the background, they had the Home on the Range cows. I've noticed two things here. One, the stuff with Flash from Zootopia is still very funny.
And the fact that he's interacting with Donald of all characters just makes it even better.
Exactly. And whoever the animators were or who was like storyboarding this really loved Robin Hood, because the Robin Hood characters make more of an appearance than I think most of that era of Disney films. Like you see, I think Colonel Hathi and the Jungle Book characters, but I didn't see any of like the Aristocats or anyone like that. They had the Rescuers, but you could easily say those were the Rescuers from the 90s movie also.
There is one character from Aristocats who, when they're playing When You Wish Upon a Star.
Oh, yeah. Right.
One of the Alley Cats is playing the trumpet.
The one voiced by Scatman Crothers. But it was just interesting how the one to instigate the When You Wish Upon a Star sequence was Chanticleer. Or who was going to be Chanticleer in its own original movie before becoming the bard in Robin Hood.
Oh.
It's touching. On the other hand, and by the way, before I say anything else, due to the process of 2D animation and how long it took to get this out, I think it was maybe they started back in 2021 or 2020. There was no way for this special to air while the actor strike is still going on. I'm not saying this was made to distract people away from the strikes and whatnot, but it is unfortunate timing, because we've had to, like, recently it seems like anytime Disney does like a surprise announcement, or what they would like to say is a surprise announcement, which is, you know, just PR strategies and all that jazz, because it's like, oh, look at this Grogu short that we made with Studio Ghibli, while we also hide the fact that we laid off 700 people. Like, stuff like that. And there's just definitely a lot of emotionally complicated opinions about Disney as a person, as a studio, and as a company. I know a lot of people really love this special, and I'm not saying it didn't tug my heartstrings, because I still enjoyed it for what it was. Like I said, it's just complicated.
I think a great example of those sort of mixed emotions is, and in a vacuum, this is a great scene where before Mickey goes down to the lobby, he stares at a poster of Walt Disney. Walt.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think this might be, I genuinely think this is probably his best performance as Mickey Mouse. In the Paul Rudess shorts, he played a very chaotic version of the character, but this time he just kind of slips into that role like a glove.
Like, listen, I know people don't want like others to criticize this because they want their nostalgia heart not broken by the fact that Disney is a very controversial company. Let's just say that, because they're like, we're family. While also Bob Iger saying the writer's demands before the deal was made were unrealistic.
And also, wasn't Walt kind of anti-union as well?
Exactly, which is why it's weird to be like, here's this emotional moment of Mickey Mouse saying thank you to Walt Disney. Walt was not the best person in the world. I know, like, it's like the greatest PR stunt ever of everyone thinking Walt Disney was this heartwarming grandpa who was a constant smoker, was very anti-union, and was very much a businessman. So I do think the people who worked on this short loved it because you want to do stuff like Goofy falling over, like off the ladder, and seeing Iago and Jafar kind of being like, oh, here comes the Goofy punchline in 3, 2, 1. Or like other interactions that you see from the other characters. People who worked on this loved it and love Mickey Mouse and these movies as a piece of art and history. But since it's connected to Disney and the recent actions of, not just even the recent actions, just Disney as a whole, as a company, I don't think it's a fluff piece. Like, don't listen to the haters. Disney's great. We're family friendly. Like I said, it's complicated. I do enjoy it overall, especially for all the 2D animation and all the interactions. I loved all the guys in the bathroom making sure they look good. If there wasn't like an army of producer and studio notes at the ready for this kind of project, I would have actually maybe liked to have seen a movie.
Like an hour-long TV special.
Or like a mockumentary comedy series or something like that. I mean, granted, you'd have to recast some of the actors because they turn out to be terrible people. They even let, like, Treasure Planet get a few scenes in the special, which, I mean, at this point, we're just going to be like, oh, yeah, like, you could see the characters here, there, all over the place. I mean, it ended nicely. It's very touching. Like, complicated thoughts aside, I did feel the love and warmth from the people who made this special. And it's now on Disney Plus. So if you haven't watched it yet or didn't catch it when it went live on TV, like, give it a watch.
And I'm pretty sure, despite airing on TV first, it's still going to play in front of Wish. So if you want to wait to see it on the big screen, you can do that.
Well, I do know I'm going to see this on the big screen when I go to Animation as Film later this week. It's going to play, I think, in front of a preview look at Wish. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So it'll be fun to see all this 2D animation and CGI blend together and what have you, and see it on the big screen right before we see more of Wish, which I'm hoping is good. I'm hoping this is just bad marketing or, you know, general audience marketing. I mean, that's what we have to call it now, because of course a lot of trailers are not going to aim at like people like you or me or the more educated film goer. And I feel like the release of the trailer, I think it was last week, maybe, like put a really sour, like everyone in a sour mood. It's like, oh, this looks bad. It's not going the Spider-Verse route. Why can't they do 2D animation? And it's like, y'all, y'all, I mean, that's a whole talk for another time about the complications of why Disney cannot quite actually do what everyone is asking them to. And it's not even a defense towards Disney. It sucks.
It's more just a practical explanation for why 2D animation,
at least in the US.
Yes, at least in the US, is not where it once was.
Exactly. And there's a reason why like a lot of foreign animated films take like 3 to 4 years, even more maybe, to come out. So, but we'll talk about that another time. Overall, I did like Once Upon a Studio. Complicated feelings and thoughts about the company as a whole aside.
Same.
But for now, we get to move on to the pretty much one of the most positive experiences we can talk about with a recent movie, with Blue Giant, directed by Yuzuru Tachikawa of Mob Psycho 100 fame, and distributed here in the States by G Kids. So if you have not heard about this movie, it did play at the Annecy Film Festival. It did not win anything, but that's just even more of a shame, but also a sign of how strong the lineup for Annecy was. And not just because I'm going to go see Mars Express and Chicken for Linda, which were at Annecy later this week. So the plot is, witness the origin of the next great jazz legend. Dai Miyamoto's life is turned upside down the day he discovers jazz. A former high school basketball player, Dai picks up a saxophone and begins practicing day and night. Determined to become one of the greatest of all time, he leaves his sleepy hometown for the bustling nightclubs of Tokyo. but soon finds the life of a professional musician is not for the faint of heart. His passion eventually wins over the cocky but talented pianist Yukinori, and after Dai convinces his friend Sunji to learn the drums, they launch a new jazz trio whose rough sound contains a raw energy that quickly wins attention from local audiences. But what does it take to be truly great? This movie was great. I mean, like, this was a much bigger surprise to me than I was honestly expecting.
This movie is honestly amazing. Looking at the synopsis for the manga, this is probably the best medium to adapt the story, because what you have with film and or television that you don't have with simply sequential art on a page is you don't get to experience the music. You don't get to feel that intense passion that this trio has simply by reading a couple panels on a page. Film and animation is, it's just the way to go to experience the story.
Just for people who are not aware, this is based off of a manga by Shinichi Ishizuka. And if you look at the anime film credits, you'll see that it was written by Number 8. And now, because of the turbulent times that we are in with dealing with AI and such, Number 8 is actually the pseudonym for the manga's editor. So he was pretty much in charge of helping adapt, which I assume is the first series, because there are three different series. There's Blue Giant, Blue Giant Supreme, and Blue Giant Explorer. And I think there's also a fourth one that's going on right now with Blue Giant Momentum. Just to be clear, if you see that and be like, what the heck's Number 8? It's not a AI program that was used.
Glad you pointed that out, because for some people, that could be a bit suspicious.
Well, it doesn't help that there was that whole thing with Studio Wit and Netflix putting out that sci-fi short that had the backgrounds made or helped along with AI and such, which wasn't the most egregious example. But, you know, right now it's just AI is a frustrating and tricky topic to discuss. And the animation studio that handled the adaptation was called Nut. And if you are not familiar with them, I understand. They started around 6 years ago in 2017, where they helped with the Saga of Tanya the Evil adaptation, FLCL Alternative, Summer 2020's only good show, Decadence, and this current season's Bull Buster, which I think is a delightful mech anime that we'll have to talk about when we talk about the fall season, FLCL Shoegaze, and are currently working on the Saga of Tanya the Evil 2. Like, at first, it doesn't look like the... Like, it looks like a typical Japanese animated film production. It looks pretty good. I like the human designs to, like, all the characters. They feel a little more grounded and real, even though they still have, like, the anime eyes and reactions and mannerisms. But there's something about the shape of the faces that they go with. They're more angular, like trapezoidish.
It's their frames that feel more, as you put it, grounded compared to other more contemporary anime designs.
Exactly. And this film does use CGI to do like minor group shots for either audience members or the bands that are playing. And it's definitely obvious, not the best CGI used during those small moments. But when it's actually the band that Dai has founded playing, they do this cool thing where it's like they ripped out the shading from the manga and place it on top of the character models. And it's hard to describe what's so special about this animation without actually seeing it yourself. It just captures that ethereal, otherworldly sensation that you pick up within your soul when you listen to jazz or people who are extremely passionate about jazz. Because, like, listen, I like rock, I like pop, I like country and all that stuff. But there is just a different feeling that's hard to describe. It's that umami factor that you get with jazz that you don't get with other genres of music.
It's the only genre that doesn't really have any rules. I mean, it has rules, but one of its rules is to break the rules. That's why trying to describe this movie without just telling you go see it is tough, because you really won't know what to expect until you experience it for yourself.
Exactly, because like if I describe this movie to you, it probably sounds very standard. It's a guy who's really passionate about this one genre of music, forms a band with people, they get popular, and then they run into, the unfortunate and least favorite part about wanting to work in music, which is dealing with the business and giant corporations and record labels and competition from other musicians and what have you, trying to be on top, especially with how this film frames jazz as a dying art. But this movie is more interested with you connecting on it on a emotional level. It's not really interested in telling a new version of this story. Like if you've seen The Commitments or Sing Street or Once,
Or
then you know.
Whiplash.
Yeah, then you know what to kind of expect with this movie. Like, especially in the third act, just conflict happens, which you know something was going to happen, but it's in the way it's executed and how emotionally charged you are with investing yourself with these characters. Then when the tragedy happens, it still hits hard. And even though, like, I think this movie looks good from start to finish, you can tell that the big performances were where all the quote unquote sakuga and resources went.
Especially the final performance.
Exactly. They kind of felt like, oh, did they like hire Science Saru to help out with some of this? Because it got very like Fantasia in a way, like especially the, I don't know if it was the first short, but you remember in Fantasia when they're doing the whole like orchestrated version of like, here are the visuals that you see while you listen to the music, and it's like violins and other instruments flying through the air and such.
Oh, yeah. I definitely need to go back and rewatch Fantasia, but I'm picturing what you're describing. And yeah, there's a lot of Fantasia influence in some of these sequences.
They animated what they're hearing with the music, is how to best put it. And with music by Hiromi Urehara, and apparently this is her first time composing for an animated film, and her jazz music is just wonderful. She captures that raw energy that you see from Dai when he plays the saxophone, like because you can hear it's like, oh, that might be hitting too high pitch of a note, but there's just something about how that hits that pulls you in to it even more.
I really want to listen to more of her stuff, because just from this movie alone, I can tell that she just lives and breathes this genre.
Exactly. She does such a great job composing the jazz sequences for this movie. Even though this is kind of a standard rise and fall to fame music journey experience, the film still does a good job capturing that whole, what is the thing that is driving you with your passion? Why are you passionate about it? What are you willing to do for that passion? And you see that very much in the dynamics between Dai having to prove himself to Yukinori and then Shunji having to prove to the other two that he can be the drummer for the group. And it leads to that whole final performance where he gets a drum solo and it's just beautiful. Like the animation here is great. And that's not a shock considering Nut was founded by a bunch of ex Studio Madhouse animators.
That makes sense.
So you got a bunch of really good people at the helm for this project because it was founded by producer Takuya Tsunoki. There was no English dub for this. I'm curious if they were not able to because of the actor strike going on.
It's possible.
But I'm not entirely sure because there's also the whole exceptions because some studios who are actually able to be like, hey, can we keep doing this if we follow these rules? And they're like, yeah, sure, why not? Go nuts. And it's like, it's just funny hearing how some of these smaller studios can do so, but these bigger studios are not wanting to budge. Anyway, the performances, though, are pretty good. I thought the three actors that they got for our three characters did a good job. They got Yuki Yamada, Shotaro Mamiya, and Amane Okoyama. On a base level, they are very traditional male characters in these kind of shows and movies and what have you. Dai is the headstrong, passionate one. Yukinori is the super talented, sort of cocky individual, and Shunji is the underdog of the group. But they have a good dynamic between each other, and you really do feel their camaraderie with one another as they train and practice and get better with their music, and how they do feel down when the world pushes against them, but are still like, you know what, we're still going to go through with it because we're going to show them, we're going to prove it to them why we are this good.
These are all pretty much like archetypes, but as I kind of said in my quick thoughts, that like the narrative of this movie really is just a frame to contain all of the other stuff, like the animation, the production design, the music. All of that is contained in what's otherwise a pretty basic story to create something that's ultimately an enjoyable experience.
Exactly. It feels rare. Like, and I'm going to say this from my own review. It feels rare that we get a movie like Blue Giant because it's very much a more mature story being told. There is no wacky anime shenanigans. There is a pseudo coming of age story being told through the band's rise and fall and their journey into adulthood. But the fact that it's following, technically they are young adults, but the fact that they are still young adults in general feels rare with what we get in animation in a lot of spaces that aren't just like adult animated comedies and what have you. Like for feature films alone, it's usually teenagers with very few adult characters. Even when we do get adult characters, they're mostly for comedies. Like, I don't know any U.S. studio that's maybe not Laika that would be willing to be like, hey, I want to make this slow burn coming-of-age music drama about a trio who form a jazz band.
I'm hard-pressed to think of any Western studio that would do that and not have it be, like, based on some sort of IP.
I mean, like, I love a lot of the studios that we see in the U.S., but there's a reason why, like, Indian foreign animation feels so refreshing because they are willing to talk about other topics, or at least go more of a distance to talk about said topics.
Plus, there's less, like, pressure from Wall Street and shareholders and other sort of interference.
Exactly. And it's just a really, like, I connect with this movie in the same way I do with Ayumu Watanabe's Children of the Sea. Like, whatever you feel about the story, if you can vibe with it on its emotional level, then you will get a truly one-of-a-kind experience with watching this movie. And it's just something that is missing from a lot of animated films these days, or from animated films that don't put as much time as possible or are given the time to focus on a deeper emotional experience with the film, or like with a film. Like Blue Giant is just great. Like I really enjoyed it, but thinking about it now and just going through my memories of watching the movie and all the different sequences, like that one random guy who shows up, like their first jazz performance, and you just see how he is like, whoa, so this is what jazz music is like. This is what happens when you truly connect with it.
Each of those sequences with like people in the audience kind of having that, oh, so that's what it feels like moment. Those moments just like complete the overall experience.
Maybe I wish it could have paced itself a little better. I don't know. Yeah, I don't have major complaints. Like, yeah, you've seen the story before. Whatever, you've seen every story before.
My one nitpick is I wish the sort of documentary framing device was a little bit more utilized, because otherwise it just kind of feels, in comparison to like the rest of the movie, a bit of afterthought.
I forgot about those moments. Yeah, they do these weird little behind the music scenes where the people who are either a part of their lives or were the actual trio get interviewed and talking about the experience that they had. But it doesn't pop up a whole lot. So when it does pop up, it's like, wait, what? What happened? Oh, we're doing another interview sequence. And it's definitely the most distracting moment of the film, but I don't care. Like, everything else worked on such a level for me that whatever complaints I have were all squashed because of just the amazing out of this body experience that you get with watching a movie like this.
That's the thing. It's the whole experience is so much better than the sum of its parts. But
Like, I know we talk about and support and rave about originality in animation and storytelling, but I don't want that to be the high that people are chasing because it seems like films like this will get thrown under the bus because it's like, oh, you didn't do anything different with the music drama genre. When it's like, man, how many music biopics have we seen that do the exact same thing and don't leave any impression, you know?
I will argue that even though narratively this does follow the beats, visually this feels matches the music. And again, film is a visual medium. So I think they nailed the most important aspect of telling this story.
Exactly. It's just a great experience. It's in my top 10. I don't know about yours.
If we're just talking about animated films, then yes, it is definitely in the top 10.
Yeah, mine's number six, I think. It's right behind Ernest and Celestine and Suzume.
It's in that ballpark for me too.
I know G Kids are kind of finicky when it comes to these limited event like releases and such, but if you could find a way to watch Blue Giant before it hits digital and physical release, like if you can watch it in a theater, definitely do so because I wish I had a theater that was near me that was playing this because I didn't. And I live in a city that has a multitude of theaters, but the one I'm willing to travel to that usually has these G Kids releases was not there. So it's frustrating to hype these films up only for people to have to wait until they hit digital or physical or streaming or whatever.
That is frustrating. And me personally, I live in the middle of nowhere, so there was just no way I was going to see this in theaters unless my local multiplex got lucky.
Exactly. It's the theatrical landscape, while having its flaws and its reasons why it sucks, like, are there. Seeing movies like Blue Giant on the big screen, or seeing like New Gods, Yang Xian, or like Inuo on a big screen would have been amazing. That's why I'm so fortunate to be going to Animation as Film this coming week, because I'm going to be able to see all these amazing movies on the big screen with people who are active and ready and willing to dive into this beautiful medium of storytelling with animation. Definitely give it a watch. But if not, make it your priority to rent it when it hits digital or physical and streaming or what have you.
Probably won't be for like another couple months, I'm assuming.
Exactly. I mean, we still haven't gotten the first Slam Dunk yet on physical, and we're just about to get the Spirited Away live stage performance films next month. So yeah, these release strategies are complicated and frustrating at times. But yeah, that's all I have to say about Blue Giant. Just a wonderful movie with some amazing music and fantastic visuals that need to be seen to understand the full experience.
I agree with all that, and I kind of have to shout out my brother, who is a big jazz fan. He actually played tenor sax in high school, and I feel like he especially would just instantly fall in love with this movie. So yes, as soon as this is available on home media, I definitely want to show this to him.
And that's it for this episode. Next time, we'll be doing a Halloween episode where we will mostly be talking about some supernatural animated series before we really dive into the fall anime season to give our impressions about it. So I can't wait to talk about these next two episodes. So
that'll be fun. But until next time, Cameron, where can everyone find you online?
You can find me on the sinking Titanic ship that is Twitter and Blue Sky at Cam's Eye View. I have my own website called camseyeview.biz, where I review animated films and shows from around the world called The Other Side of Animation. I also have a Patreon at patreon.com/camseyeview. That's where you can find me.
And you guys can find me on various social media at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and that place at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube, Podchaser, subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/RenegadePopCulture. Listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And last but not least, everything can be found at RenegadePopCulture.com. You can escape, so do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Animation. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.